by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems, that we will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, I must have this thing. Tonight we have Charles B. coming back to tell his story again. Last time, I think he had about 30 minutes notice, and this time we gave him a little more than a week, and he always steps up when he's asked to do something for AA and for his fellow alcoholics. He's truly a miracle. He's going to tell you much more about that, but I give you my friend, Charles B.
My name is Charles, and I am an alcoholic. Let's see now. I wasn't nervous until Willie kept on saying, look at all the people, man. So right now I'm getting a little nervous, you know what I mean? But anyway, all I was supposed to do is tell you how it was, what happened, and how it's like now. And the best of my memory. I was born in Dublin, Georgia, August 24th, 1949. My mom and dad got divorced when I was five. Mama moved to Milledgeville, Georgia, and Daddy moved to Lakeland, Florida. He was an alcoholic, and he always run a bar, so, you know, I'd see him during the summertime. And 2 weeks at Christmas, then I'd be back with my mama to school. And I had to ride a Greyhound bus, six years old, riding the bus by myself. And I enjoyed every minute of it. You see, that's all I wanted to do was, I was a traveler. I was born to ride. So, you know, and that rocked on, and sometimes my daddy tell me he was coming down to get me or coming up to get me, and he'd get drunk, and he'd stop somewhere like Lake City to see his friends. Must be as far as he got. So I started pretty young saying that I would never be like my daddy. And, you know, he was drinking, and he got remarried to a mean woman that I think he was as scared of as I was. So anyway, he stayed with her a couple of years. Then he married another woman. I don't know much about that, but anyway, he finally married his fourth wife, and they had four sons. And by the time my mama remarried, and she had two daughters, so poor old me, I didn't have nobody. I had a brother; he lived 3 days. So, you know, I always felt left out. That's the reason I started drinking, because I felt left out. But anyway, I was doing good, you know, all through high school. I made bad grades in general behavior, and that's where I got my first F, was in that. And then when I became a senior in high school, the only thing breathing down my back was I was too stupid to go to college. If I'd been smart enough, I couldn't have went because I didn't have no money. I come from a poor family. My mama and my daddy wouldn't give me nothing. And so I fell in love with a girl. She was in the ninth grade, and I was in the 12th grade. I like them young women. So anyway, she was a pretty thing, and we went out on a date. She was real nice to me, so I married her. I had to wait till I was 18, and then her grandfather gave her permission to get married. So we got married and moved to Florida. My daddy bought me a service station. There I was, 18 years old, you know, and on the service station. Ain't that something? I wore that star, Texaco star. You push the car. I didn't know a damn thing about automobile. I knew how to put gas in it. And I could air up the car pretty good. But, anyway, we thought that she was going to have a baby back when we got married, but we found out that she wasn't, so that was a blessing right there. And I met another girl at the service station, and I went out with her even though I was married, and I knew better than that. I may have been taught better, but I just couldn't help it. I fell in love with her, so I wanted to get divorced about it, and I was too chicken to tell my wife, so I give a guy $50 to tell her. He went and told her, and she left. So I called her daddy a couple of times. I said, "Has Peggy got down there yet?" He said, "I ain't heard from her." So I called the law. I said, "Man, this girl got lost. She got kidnapped or something." And they went looking for her. They found her. She was in a motel room with the guy getting $50. And then I got mad. So was my woman. Anyway, I forgot to mention I was drinking all this time. I started drinking in the 12th grade. But I didn't drink that much. I drank Budweiser, and every now and then I drank liquor. But God, I get so sick off the liquor. So I just mostly drank beer. And I got divorced from Peggy on Thursday, and I remarried on Friday. I come to Georgia here. I didn't want that girl to get away. She was real good to me. So anyway, I finally got the letter from Officer Sam that they needed me in the military. So it's called a draft notice. And somehow I thought that I was going to be overlooked. So every night on TV, that's all you're seeing, how many getting killed and all that stuff. And I didn't want no part of that. I didn't have enough money to get to Canada. And wouldn't know how to get there anyway. And, all I had was a 57 Ford. It had a bone cylinder in it. So. But anyway, come the day that I finally had to go get sworn in, and a friend of my wife's met me up at the bus station and said she wanted to go with me. Lord gosh, be like a fool. She was good to me. She told my wife after I was in boot camp and, you know, getting caught up in lies. That's where I started getting caught up in, and I stayed in a lie from then on to save money. I just couldn't get out of it without a told so many. I could even remember what I said. But I remember getting on the plane, flying Tiger, on my way over to Vietnam. And I got sitting there in that chair, and I was thinking, I was already, you know, about half. Well, I was wrong. Because the stewardess made sure we had plenty of drink on that plane. But I still thought, well, you know what? How in the hell did I get somebody to talk me into sitting down in this seat, fixed to go all the way around the world to this war? I mean, that ain't right. That ain't right thinking that I should have just said, no, I ain't going to go to jail. And I rode over there. Anyway, when I got off the plane, everybody said, gee, gee, which means that I still had my 365 days to go, and they didn't have that long. So that's pretty bad. I had a bad feeling about that. And I went to, believe it or not, a guy sitting right next to me on the plane was a classmate of mine in high school. And I went to his hooch. He was kind of going back on compassionate leave. I went to his hooch. I'd been in country 20 minutes, and I was doing heroin. And that was my first drug. And it sort of lets you people lay back. If they're going to shoot, they need to go on and shoot. That became what I did, that and pot. They had some pretty good reefer over there, too. Pretty good stuff. You know, anyway, I made it back home, and when I got back, I can remember just squatting down in a fetal position in the airport in Atlanta. I didn't know what was wrong. I can remember an Okinawa coming back that I'd give a dude $20 to go give me a little bit. So you can get a valve for $10, so $20, I figured it'd last me a while. I ain't seen the dude yet. I don't know if he's still looking for him or not. I give up on that. But I came back and, got a job with my daddy at his service station. It was a busy, busy service station. And I was steady drinking and doing drugs, but mostly somebody introduced me to speed. If I did Quaaludes to get off the heroin, and I done speed to get off the Quaaludes. And then I found out if I smoked reefer in the middle of it, it'd mellow me out, and liquor would make it smooth. So that was a hell of a recipe. But I got off of that, and I was steady drinking liquor. I love that red liquor. And then somebody asked me one day, did I want to hit acid? I said, what does it do to you? Well, it just makes you feel good. I said, I got to go to work tomorrow. He said, you can go to sleep anytime you want to. I said, all right. Next morning, I had to open the station up, and my eyes were that big around. I ain't even laid down. So I go and open up, and I know the guy that worked there, he come up to me and said, you must have had a hell of a night last night. My face was red. Yeah. I was going to try to, but my daddy was pretty mean. Pretty strict. I think he whipped me twice, and up until the day he died, all he had to do was point his finger at me, and I was scared of him, still am, but he died, so I ain't quite as scared. But anyway, I remember a lady coming up, and I went home with this. She come up and wanted me to put some air in her tire, so I'm on that ass, and I squatted down and started putting air in that tire. I don't know what I started cracking about, but next thing I know, I couldn't hear nothing for 2 days. Anyway, and I didn't even know I was having fun. But my marriage was going good. I had a little boy, and he was going pretty good there for a while, about 5 years. And I went down to the store to get a loaf of bread and a pack of cigarettes, and I wound up in Washington, D.C. I come to my senses in South Carolina, and I called her. I said, hey, Kay, I said, I made a mistake. You ain't mad at me, are you? She said, where the hell you at? I said, South Carolina. She said, you better keep going. Don't come back in. So I did. I went to St. Rolling Stone. Yeah, that's another talk right there. But anyway, I met another girl somehow. And I never did go home. So she filed for divorce, which was okay with me. So child support, I had to pay child support. And I fell in love with another girl. It was a friend of mine's wife. And, I don't know. I guess she liked the drugs I had better than his. So we got married. And stayed married to her 9 years. Had two beautiful girls, which I adore. I adore my son, but he's been in prison ever since he was about 18. He's been out maybe twice, and as soon as he gets out, he goes right back. And he's being charged now. He'll probably just get life this time. Yeah, I hate that. I hate it. But at least I found out where he is, and I was able to send him some money. Because I know in jail money, you got your honey bars and stuff like that. That's the main thing in prison. So, But anyway, I stayed married to her, and her sister was in a Miss Florida contest, so I thought I had me a trophy, you know. We stayed married 12 years, and she threw a vodka bottle at me. I done went to vodka because somebody told me that red liquor made me mean. I need to go to a gin. Well, that gin made me sin, so I tried to go to vodka. And I drank that vodka. I remember one day she threw a liquor bottle at me. She said, it's either that for me. And thank God it's one of them cheap plastic balls that bounce. So it breaks. So I got in, and that marriage ended. So I said, that's it. I'll never be like my daddy, and I done had the same amount of wives either. But I met another girl I think it was a family reunion. I was down there looking for a date anyway. So I found her, and we got married. And that was the meanest person I have ever run across in my life. And she got drunk, and we drank just like each other. I mean, she was probably qualified. I can't diagnose her. I'm pretty sure she's just like me. And she stabbed me one time. She just seemed like she had a butcher knife right there, hand down. Something I might have said made her mad or something, I don't know. But she stabbed me. Went in here and came out here. Bled, could cut. And I thought in my mind right there, I said, I'm going to keep you back, little lady. I'm not going to the doctor. I'm going to bleed to death, and they're going to arrest you from birth. That's good thinking, eh? But at the time, all this seemed like a good thing to do. It's like I'm just bouncing up. It's like you start seeing the ball come out of a pinball machine. And then it come back in the hole, and instead of resting, here you go. So, anyway, after she stabbed me, I stayed with her. I was scared to leave her. We went to Tybee Island and started living there, and I think she started to, I know she did, started to run around on me. Can you imagine something like that? But anyway, I met a girl that I was at the bar in the booth, listened to all my brothers, and I just sort of faded out. And somebody was shaking me, said, hey, you want a drink? I said, yeah, yeah. She got me a drink. I looked up at her, and I'm going to tell y'all, if she weighed less than 400 pounds, I've never seen a woman as huge. But she got me a drink, and then she wanted up, I want to come spend an hour with her. She said she had a quart or something of brandy. I said, well, sure. So next morning I woke up. I said, what in the hell am I doing here? And I looked over in the corner, and there was that brand. I said, oh yeah, I remember now. She gave me $100 to go across the street to buy breakfast. I guess it would have took her too long to get out the door. But I went over there and bought her breakfast, and she gave me the change at $100 bill. She got a nice new automobile, and she had a prescription to Xanax. What else can you ask no more? Anyway, she wondered if I want to go back to Las Vegas with her, and I said, yeah. So we went, and went in my truck. Her son come down and drew the car back, and when he looked at me, he thought, Jesus Christ, well, I had hair about like this, but I didn't get haircuts, and mine didn't grow long, it grows big. And anyway, he looked at me, he thought, phew. I was homeless. I was sleeping on the beach, and whoever let me sleep with them. But anyway, I said, yeah, I'll go to Las Vegas with you. I had nothing else to do. So we got Meridian, Mississippi. We stopped and got a motel. Well, next morning, wasn't under crank, and I couldn't wake her up. Let me back that story up a minute. Me and her was holding hands on the beach down on Tybee Island, and all of a sudden she just fell down. And I'm drunk and trying to pick her up. God Almighty. Here come the police. And the police says, "Charles, what you trying to do?" I said, "Man, this woman fell. I'm trying to get her up." He said, "You get on that side, I'll help you." We worked a sweat. And the police said, "Boy, you got a hell of a lot of stuff on your hands." And he left. So that's how big she was. But she was sweet. Bless her heart, I guess it was. I wasn't around much. But we got in Mississippi. I got into my truck and I was going to try to write a check that I had found. And somehow they stopped me because I was going and stole this one here. I guess it looked dodgy. 7 o'clock in the morning. He gave me a DUI. For drinking. Of course, I was drinking. Took me to the jail, and they didn't even have a commode in the jail. They had a hole right in the middle of the cell. And I said, "My gosh, this is the nastiest place I've ever been." And then he finally come up there after about 3 or 4 days and says, "Anybody got a Mississippi address?" I said, "I got one." And they let me out of jail. I made up an address quicker than heck. He let me out of jail to come back on August the 24th, my birthday, to be in court for drunken driving. I mean, DUI. I said, "I'll be here." I went on to New Orleans. And I don't remember where I left the lady at. So I went on to New Orleans and I went in a bar and never seen anything like that. I mean, they stayed open and wasn't closed. And there was all kind of women in there, and I have never seen nothing like that. I mean, they would come in there in new clothes, smelling good, and I didn't know it was the same women come in over and over and over. But they were, and that's what they were. And when I went outside, somebody stole my truck. Had my clothes, my ID, everything. And I called 911 and told them, and they more or less, after about 3 or 4 hours, they standing in the same place waiting on them, they told me to keep walking. And so I didn't know what to do. So I kept on walking. I come down to Interstate 10 down there, and I seen people up under. So I went up under there, and that became my home. And I would sleep on the cardboard, and then some people. I was sleeping with the cardboard, and there was a lady there, a bag lady. She sang what kind of shape I was in. And she'd get a bottle, bless her heart, one of those little Coke liter bottles, and she'd go down Bourbon Street, and she'd pour bourbon and water, or a scotch, a gin, or beer, or wine, and everything else in there, and fill that bottle up. So when I woke up in the morning, I had that bottle. I drank that bottle, I could do some serious thinking. I'd go down and borrow and beg for money. And one time I remember walking down there, down Bourbon Street, and I seen a big old piece of cardboard about that thick. And I thought that I was doing all right. I seen that piece of cardboard, and I like to have a hissy fit. I said, "Man, look at this. I've got the best piece of cardboard there is." And I hit it, and somebody else stole it. So I'm back down there on the same piece of cardboard that I had hit. And there was a poor guy sitting laying over there. He was smoking a cigarette, and I was too. And I looked over, and he was laying on the pure ground to see me. And I thought to myself, you know, I hope I never get that look. But I did. I got lower. Anyway, after that divorce, I finally got back to Georgia. They locked me up for driving a stolen vehicle, which I forgot to erase the number off, but it fell in the truck. So they locked me up there, and I finally got out of that. I had to prove who I was with no ID, but he finally said, either you're the best liar I've ever seen or you're telling the truth, which I was telling the truth. And so I drove on to, I was going back to Tybee Island where my wife was. And got stopped up there in Panama City. When I got back in, I had to steal gas and beer to make it to Jacksonville. And I went to Jacksonville. I went to the Kmart, borrowed enough money to get a quart of beer. And I went down on the beach and opened that beer up and took a drink of it. And the law pat me on the shoulder back there with a stick. He said, stand up, you're under arrest. I said, for what? He said, for drinking beer on the beach. So I went back to jail. They checked out my ID and all that, and they found out that I had a warrant in Panama and a Palatka, Florida, for a bad check. And it wasn't but $1,000. I mean, my God. And then so they took me to jail there. And I mean, I'm still thinking everything's all right. Jail. Of course, I hadn't read the big bit where it says that's where we're going to wind up. Anyway, to make a long story short, me and that girl finally got a divorce, thank God. She only shot me. She shot me one more time, no twice. And I said, it's about enough, this stuff. But anyway, I wound up marrying my old sweetheart. And that was number five. I done passed my daddy's record. And of course, I wasn't even thinking about it then. I had met, I don't know if any of y'all ever heard of it, but the cocaine stuff. And I was doing that pretty good, that happy powder. And one day the guy come up and said, I don't have no more powder, but I got some crack. And I said, well, you know, I've never tried that. He said, well, that's pretty good. Try it. I didn't get nothing on it. Next time, I got something on it. And that's when my life, it was going gradually down, but that's sort of when my life was plummeted. It just went straight down. Because I loved the crack and everything that went around it. You know, I loved to get everything. I was sort of like the actor that wanted to rule the whole stage. I had to get the right amount of stuff. I had a pretty good amount of money. I can't tell you all the reason why how I got it, but I used to have a good business selling shirts to the VA. I had every VA in the whole country. And I was doing good at that. Till we all know. But anyway, I got married again, and we went up to Augusta, and I got shot there trying to score some crack. I had the money in my hand, and the guy was going to rob me. So I was leaning over the steering wheel like this, and just as I leaned back, that's when he shot. I heard it, seen the thing, and it went in here and came out here. Now, had I still been over that steering wheel, it would have went through every organ. And anyway, I hauled ass to Kroger and got them full befores and some of that antibiotic ointment. And I put it on, and I went back down there. Don't blame me that way, buddy. That's sort of stupid after I look back on it. But anyway, me and her lived together for 2 years. And the crack had just got me doing things that... doing crack involved, you know, getting, y'all know. So anyway, man, I had to go to prison for writing checks, and I only did actually in prison it was a year, but I did 160 before that, and then I did 124 to 160. I was out of jail one day. And they got me and brought me back that day. But anyway, I could continue smoking crack, going to probation. I mean, the parole officer was going to come and knock on my door any time. I just couldn't say no. I live right next door to the dope man, and it was just hard to do. But anyway, after a while, I already knew, I'd been told that my liver was bad, that I had the hepatitis C, and it was getting pretty hard drinking liquor, and I needed to quit. And I thought, you must be stupid, doctor. If you had a good time as I did, you sure wouldn't mention quit. Anyway, I asked my friend to bring me up here. I took a hit of crack cocaine and went in my parole officer's place, and he had a bottle there for me to pee in. And I thought, you know, well, you do what you got to do, I do what I got to do, and I hauled ass. And I knew that it was just a matter of time, so I called the VA in Dublin, and it hadn't been long left there, and Augusta wouldn't take me. I didn't want to come to Atlanta because this place up here, I heard on TV that you walk up here, you go, somebody's going to shoot you or steal your car. I saw you here when you're in Milledgeville and stuff like that. But Mama had me committed to the mental institution twice, and I did all that stuff. I was prison, mental institution, and I just about had death. Come up here, and I got a sponsor and worked the steps, and I seen a girl hitchhiking. I picked her up, and she had some liquor, and I said, well, I think I'll take one drink. Had 2 years, dude. I said, I think I'll take a drink just so me and her can socialize. And next thing I know, I done totaled my car and started drinking mouthwash. And my last drink that really put the stops to me was rubbing alcohol. And that's a blessing, because had it been for that, I probably wouldn't ever came back. But I seen right then, and I know for a fact I can't do nothing. And I got on the VA kept on saying about my liver. And so finally one day the VA doctor said, why don't you go to Piedmont and get a second opinion? Well, they said, man, you got to have a liver. So you got to do this. You got to quit smoking. And it was just everything, my higher power just lifted from me. I already knew about the higher power. And, you know, getting me to just stop drinking and doing dope and not even wanting it today is a miracle to me. I can compare that with Moses, you know, parting that sea. That ain't nothing compared to me. Not even want to drink today. And it wasn't me, so it must have been something higher than me. And today I can call on God. And today I try to live to the best I can. I try to treat people right. I try to do the right thing. But more than anything in the world that I know today is there is a higher power, which I'll call God, call it what you want to, that just takes care of me. I don't know why, but I can look back on it and getting shot if I hadn't moved, getting stabbed, I didn't die with all that blood. And then Father's Day, I was blessed with a new liver and a new kidney. And before that, it was about every 10 days I had to be drained of fluid, that 10 to 12 liters. And then they tried to put this tips thing in me so some blood could be bypassed through my liver. And it came back, and then they had ammonia in it. So every 8 to 10 days, I'd go in a little mini coma. And then I'd swell up back to the Piedmont, and I couldn't eat nothing. And really, I didn't want to die, but it just seemed like, you know, if it's going to be like this, it ain't that bad. But whenever I was on that gurney or bed or whatever you want to call it, going into surgery, the lady come up and said, I'm going to give you something to relax you. I said, I don't need it. I mean, it's just like I knew no matter what, it was going to be all right. And they give it to me anyway. When I woke up, I was hurting like heck. I couldn't wait for that light to come on so I could mash that button for the morphine. But, it didn't make me relapse nothing like that. But when you're in that kind of pain, buddy, you got to have something. And I mash that button and that light wouldn't come on. Hey, man. Then I get to talking to somebody. I had so much prayer from right out of here and in some churches that I know for a fact prayer works. It wasn't nothing I'd done to get all this stuff, because I have tried to destroy everybody's life that I've come across. I've made a lot of amens. You know, the state of Georgia did most of my 8-step for me. And they made sure I did my 9-step. So, I've been blessed all around. And since I've been here just 3.5 years or something like that, I've paid all my child support. I've paid all restitution. And I go see my mother. She had a stroke, a spinal stroke, and she's 83 years old, and she just proud of her son as she can be. And my daughters, I get text messages now. My baby daughter's on the way from California back here. And when I was in prison, she wouldn't even write me a letter. And why would I even want to think about taking a drink when I know for a fact where it's going to take me? So they say one drink, one drunk. I may not get drunk right then, but I done broke my bond with everybody I know, and I'm going to say, to heck with it. I'll do it now, and I'll be all right tomorrow. That's a lie. For me it is, because once I start, I can't quit. I think they call it something like a phenomenon of craving. And I can relate to it. But actually, I am happy that I'm an alcoholic, and I'm also happy that I got that peculiar mental twist. Because if you can't be happy, that's what we're put here for, to be happy and help each other. No matter what book you read, that's what it says. It's simple. And by helping somebody, you feel better about yourself. When you feel better about yourself, you love yourself, and that makes you be able to love somebody else. And I like to cut the fool, but I tell you what, that when it comes down to the serious thing, I know it wouldn't be serious, but I'm not going to be one of them gloom lots or whatever. If I got to be sad here, no, I can go to bar school and be sad. That one song had come up, and that I heard that when I was in up under the bridge in New Orleans, the song kind of reminded by Janis Joplin, you know, freedom's just another word for nothing else to lose. Well, I didn't have nothing else to lose, so I call that freedom. And then that song where Good Time Charlie's Got the Blues, that's the one that brought me in. Because I had the blues. They used to call me Good Time Charlie because I was born a butcher. But anyway, I appreciate y'all being here for me, and that's about all I can say without cranking up another story. And, maybe that be on down the line, but I appreciate it, and thank y'all very much.
Charles, outstanding. More than adequate, as Frank might say. George Wood is going to, or George W. is going to give up. come over here.
I'm George. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. That was a great story. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate that. We have a chip system. If you would like to try or retry our way of life, we offer the white chip. It's white, the color of surrender. And carry that for 30 days. You've earned a silver chip, recycled beer can. It says, call your sponsor before, not after. And after 90 days, you have earned the red chip. Your blood should be getting red again. After 6 months, you've earned a yellow chip. And after 9 months, you've earned a green chip. And then 1 year or multiple thereafter, we give you the blue chip. Does anybody want to try or retry this way of life? Except the white chip? Does anybody have 30 days? 60 days? 90 days?
Is that kind of wrong? No, wait a minute.
The red is 90 days.
So oh, I'm sorry.
That's 6 months.
Okay, it's a little different from where I got sober in Dalton.
Right.
Okay, so I'm where?
You're 6 months.
Okay. Which is the
yellow chip.
Yeah, 6 months. Golden ray of sunshine chip. Anybody got 9 months? And 1 year or multiples thereof?
All right.
I'm Frank Waters, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I did this by getting sober at somebody. I was a very angry young man when I came in. And I showed them. And I also did it by kicking and screaming and anything my sponsor suggested. So, you know, you get your own version of your own sponsors and just do what they say. Now we're all assholes. And that's the only way I know how to sponsor. Yeah. So, this is 21 for me. Thank you. Anyone else need blue chip?
Thank you.
Here's the one we have.
Thank you, George. Great work. Okay. It's time for AA related announcements. Yes.
Yeah, my name is James. I'm an addict alcoholic.
Hey, James.
Kind of a personal announcement, but kind of just sort of interesting to our family. But next time we need a message delivered to all of us, I'm the man.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
This Sunday is meets here, and also the Atlanta Old Timers meeting has held here this Sunday. It's a breakfast and lunch speaker meeting. So it's a real good event. And I'm sure they're going to do the broadcast downstairs too. So we'll go upstairs.
Okay, breakfast starts at 8, I think. And the speaker starts at 11, and in this room we'll get maxed out. So,
yeah, I'm telling an alcoholic. Need a few volunteers who will to help straighten the room up, get it ready for the 7:30 meeting in the morning cleanup. It would really appreciate it. If we can get a few helpers, we'll knock it out in a few minutes.
Okay, thank you, Paul. All right, so I guess that's it. Unless anybody have a key to the literature cabinet?
I do.
Okay, Jim. Okay. I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us of these principles, the four personalities, and for those who will, join us in the Lord's Prayer. Let's pray.
pray.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Hey, Paul. Would you mind signing?
Hey, Leanne. How are you doing?